Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Let's go around the NFL to keep you in the loop. Brought to you by BioCleanTex.com on Sports Radio 610.
Randall Cobb being mentioned in trade rumors per Aaron Wilson. Randall Cobb trade would make sense for a couple reasons. Number one, he's due $12 million in dead money next year. Or guaranteed his roster, it's going to be $12 million. Number two, I think he would want to be traded just based on the way that he's spoken. And number three, more Kiki QT. You could evaluate Kiki QT and see what's going on, and it would actually force the Texans coaching staff to play Kiki. So Randall Cobb, I think it's a long shot. But if it does happen, I think it's in the best interest of all parties involved.
Well, I'm just glad they're talking trade. I really hope it's not Jack Easterby conducting the business here, that it's Bazargan or someone like that. Or as I mentioned, I'm glad I remember to bring this up with Stanford Rapp. I don't think people really understand how powerful some of these big-time agents are. You know, with, as he put it, you know, some of these CAA agents and all the big, you know, Rosenhouses of the world and all that stuff of the football world, they can contact teams and say, look, we are open and willing for fill in the blank to be traded. And then the conversation, they can almost like mediate, you know, the conversations here. And the reason I ask is because if I'm Will Fuller, I would almost rather be traded than be left to wait to see who the next general manager and head coach is. Because when you're traded, at least you have some slight, you know, power to determine where you're going to be, or at least you know where you're going to be in advance. So Fuller's one, Cobb's one, Stills, those are possibilities. J.J. Watt should be a possibility.
I like Will. We talked about last week that Green Bay would be a team that would make sense for Will Fuller. It comes down to, though, he's going to be a free agent. Is the team going to have the cap space to sign him? What would that look like? And if you put Will Fuller in a situation he doesn't want to be in, maybe he uses some leverage to get out of it.
Yeah.
I don't see why he wouldn't like being in Green Bay, though. Mm-hmm. Playing with Aaron Rodgers, playing opposite Davante Adams, and playing with Matt LaFleur.
Not too far from Notre Dame.
It seems like a place that would make sense for him. The price would have to be right, though. You don't just trade Will Fuller just to trade Will Fuller. But do you try to maybe get back that second round that you traded for Brandon Cooks?
Right.
And then you try to find someone in the second round? There are some receivers making plays that were drafted in the second round. Brandon Ayuk comes to mind. Chase Claypool out of Michigan, who you could have drafted instead of Ross Blacklock if you were so inclined to do.
Yeah.
And maybe this discussion would make a lot more sense. But these are just some of the names that are coming up. And you got to think that Kenny Stills is someone that the Texans are basically just willing to trade a seventh for at this point because he's not going to be back no matter
just
what.
Just get an asset, any asset for Kenny Stills. Fuller might be able to bring a little more. Cobb, who knows, depending on the right team. But I'm just glad they're talking. And then J.J. needs to be moved to get the most if you really want to get the most out of it.
Trade deadline less than a week away. In the Loop, Sports Radio 610, going around the NFL. Trevor Lawrence looks like he wants to be in the AFC South. There's been talk about Jacksonville. There's been talk about the Jets. Trevor Lawrence yesterday, during his media availability, one of the most decorated prospects to come out since, I would say, Andrew Luck, probably.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here's Trevor Lawrence talking about whether or not he's going to come out next year and be the first pick in the NFL draft.
I don't know. I mean, we'll just have to see how things unfold. I think there's a lot of factors in that. But playing this year, putting everything I have into it and not really focusing on next year, whether, you know, I leave or stay or whatever. Obviously, I have the option to do either one. Kind of my mindset's been that I'm going to move on, but who knows? There's a lot of things that could happen. God has a plan for me no matter where that is, no matter where I go, whether that's across the country, whether that's close to home, where I stay another year, no matter what it is, we'll work it out.
All right, he's not staying another year, okay? I think you can bet on that. It would be silly. He could have come out after his freshman year and been the number one overall pick. You don't risk it, not if you're a college player. I think he's just being diplomatic. He's making sure the fans realize and his teammates realize that their main focus is this year.
The Trevor Lawrence discussion, I think, is part of the discussion that you talked about, and it's kind of part of your Sports Radio 16 column where you talk about the most appealing open jobs.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Texans. We're assuming that the Jets are going to be open. We're assuming that the Jags are going to be open, and we know that the Falcons are going to be open. There seems to be a theory that Houston is the most appealing because Deshaun Watson's 25 years old. He's young, and you want the quarterback.
Right.
But you kind of refute that in your column.
Yeah, if I'm, let's say Robert Saleh is the number one consensus, unanimous, best coaching option out there. All right, he's the guy that we want for the Texans. So he looks at the Texans and he sees Deshaun Watson. He's like, hey, now, that's a hell of a good start right there. We got Deshaun Watson. But he also sees the fact that this team is going to be over the cap next year, and their first draft pick in 2021, this coming draft, is number 67 overall. They also don't have a second-round draft pick. They also have just such a bad supporting roster on the defensive side for Deshaun Watson. Well, okay, but you still got Deshaun Watson. Now compare that to the Jets. I can draft Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields. That'll give me extra time because it'll be about a 4 or 5 year plan before anybody's really expecting a lot out of me. I have 3 picks in the top 35 overall and a lot more draft picks beyond that, and I'll have salary room. So don't be so sure that the Jets isn't a better-looking job for a new coach than the Texans because, yeah, the Texans have the established, you know, Deshaun Watson, but not much else. And they also have a fan base that's really, really anxious to get a winner sooner rather than later as opposed to the Jets who will be energized by the new thing. Same thing with the Jaguars. Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence, new coach, more salary room, three picks in the top 35 overall, and more draft picks, a lot more draft picks than the Texans will have. Don't be so sure that's not a more attractive job. Even the Falcons and maybe even the Lions, because of those reasons, would be more attractive.
Interesting to see. Call them at sportsradio610.com. That's Around the NFL here on In the Loop. Coming up. Is baseball ruined, and is the worst of it coming to Houston? That's next.
According to Robert Arthur of Baseball Perspectives,
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
Worst decision in World Series history last night, in my opinion. You've covered it longer than me. You tell me, John. I know we got mad at A.J. Hinch last year.
Yeah.
But Zach Greinke was at least showing a little bit of wear and tear.
Mm-hmm.
Taking out Blake Snell yesterday after 73 pitches, he struck out the next 3 batters 2 times each. The next 4 batters, 7 out of 8. 73 pitch count, 2 singles allowed. That's the worst decision in my lifetime of watching the World Series, which goes back to Jack Morris and the Braves, really. That's the worst one that I've seen.
Second worst. Second worst decision in baseball history. You're going to agree when I tell you.
It's a lot of pressure, John.
You had a defensive replacement for Bill Buckner ready. Ball goes to Bill Buckner, little dribbler, right through his legs. We've all seen the highlight. That was the worst. This might have been the second worst. I don't feel like I'm overstating it. I can't think of anything else that would compete with this. Only because 73 pitches. It's not just that Blake Snell was dealing. It was that he was dealing. His numbers against the next 6 guys he was going to face, 3 guys he was going to face, were overwhelming, all strikeouts, and he had only thrown 73 pitches. It's just too much. It's just too much analytics taking over, and I'm not, you know, you agree with me, so this is not an old man on the porch, you know, get off my lawn kind of take here. Sometimes you have to use analytics. You don't just rely on analytics. you use the analytics to get you here, to understand what kind of team you have, and that certain times you should take a pitcher out in the sixth inning because of whatever is going on the field. But you can't rely on it, because they relied on it rather than used it and contradicted it, because anybody watching that game knew Blake Snell was ready to go, and he would have gone, and the entire outcome of the game would have been different.
When the opposing batter that would have faced Blake Snell with one out and a runner on first in a 1-0 game, and one of the best players in baseball says this when he's asked by Alex Rodriguez what he thought about the decision by Kevin Cash to take out Blake Snell, this kind of tells you all that you need to know. You didn't need the confirmation, because your eyes already told you common sense and an overall feel, as well as the fact that the relief pitcher you brought in had allowed a run in six straight outings. You already knew that, but when Mookie Betts sits down with Alex Rodriguez and he says this is really all you need to know.
They take him out. Tell me what you're thinking as Cash is taking him out, and obviously the big double to ignite the Dodgers.
I think at that point I was like, I got a chance. Snell's rolling. You guys know how it is. I mean, it's just like, you're not really seeing it that well. He was mixing it up. You know, I wasn't asking any questions, though. I was just like, hey, you know, your manager said you got to go. You know, once he came out, I think it was like everybody could breathe again. And, you know, we were able to put some good at-bats together.
I mean, that's all you really need to hear. And I'm concerned that this is going to be something that, with James Click coming over from Tampa Bay, this is going to be something that the Astros are going to be doing, where your overall common sense, your feel, takes a back seat. It's not even to analytics, because the Dodgers use analytics. The Dodgers use analytics, but it's literally a cut and dry mindset that the third time through the order, we don't want this guy going out there, regardless of if he's had 7 out of 8 strikeouts and facing the top 4 guys in the lineup, regardless of what his pitch count is, and regardless of the fact that the reliever that we're bringing in has now, after yesterday, allowed a run in 7 straight postseason appearances, which is a record. That's what's scary. When you get so married to a philosophy that you don't even take in numbers, you don't even take in data, that's where it's scary. And that's where what happened last night stings so much as someone that doesn't want to watch this type of baseball. And just from a fan perspective, seeing Blake Snell go out there and leave it out all on the line and then get it taken away from him for really the second time in like a couple weeks by Kevin Cash, it's heartbreaking, because a lot of times you don't get that opportunity back. Blake Snell's in his mid-20s. He's won the Cy Young Award. And a lot of times when you go to a World Series like that and you have that kind of performance, that who knows how it would have finished when he gets taken away from you, you don't get it back, man. That's tough, and I felt terrible for the kid.
You rely on it, and I appreciate it, the numbers and the analytics. But sometimes, and I'm stealing this from my buddy Nick Wright, it's a great way to put things. Sometimes you have to make your decision based on what the opponent least wants you to do. Forget what the analytics say. Forget what your head coaches, what everything you know, tells you otherwise. Sometimes the best decision is the one that your opponent least wants you to do. And that applies to every sport. Hey, let's sit James Harden in the second half of a playoff game. That's what the opponent least wants us to do. I mean, most wants us to do. So you have to do, you have to make the right decision, you know, and so that's why you have to use your gut as much as the analytics. Use them, don't rely on them.
Here is the official pitcher of In the Loop, Blake Snell, talking about his reaction to getting pulled by Kevin Cash yesterday when it looked like he was en route to a historic performance.
No, I mean, definitely disappointed, upset. You know, I don't know. I just want the ball. I felt good. I did everything I could to, you know, prove my case to stay out there. And then for us to lose, you know, it sucks. It's not, I mean, I don't really know what to say, you know. I want to win, and I want to win the World Series, and that's the goal. So for us to lose, I mean, it just sucks. I mean, he's a hell of a manager, so I'm not going to question him. I'll voice my opinion, and, yeah, I can only look forward to, you know, the offseason, what I'm going to accomplish this offseason to get ready to, you know, be the best me I can be for next year. Yeah, pretty much that's it.
He needs to get Josh good at video games in the offseason. He needs to take a break, get good at video games, and then get back to it. But you hear that. And another thing that I think kind of sucks is Blake Snell had his boss not believe in him. Like, his boss literally did not believe in him when he was doing his best work.
Yeah.
That kind of has to hurt him a little bit, too, to have his boss not believe in him in that situation. And him believing in himself and his boss just going, like, cut and dry, hard-headed, and just deciding that it wasn't good enough and he was going to put someone else in. And someone that was inferior.
Inferior, I mean, even in the most recent history, most recent appearances, it was a bad move. And my big worry is that the days of being able, for baseball fans, it's a problem.
Tim Kurkjian almost cried yesterday.
Well, because all our great baseball postseason memories are based on that, on those types of
pitchers. Jack Morris, the Braves pitchers, Oral Hershiser, LeVon Hernandez, Josh El Duque, Becker, Andy Pettitte. Yeah. We can just keep going.
The gutting it out,
Cole Hamels,
fighting through the
Madison Bumgarner,
the fatigue. And to be clear again, it's not like he was fatigued last night. I mean, he had 73 pitches. He was good to go.
I mean, it's not like he got rocked.
Yeah. And he didn't get right. He gave two hits. He was striking out everybody he was about to face. He struck them all out.
All he needed was a ground ball, yeah, and he would have kept
going.
But
those days of just watching those
pitchers cheated
are over.
We got cheated. But the question is, could Blake Snell have done more? Because I like a lot of times competitors convince themselves, even in these situations, they could have done more. Blake Snell, could you have done more?
You feel like there's anything you could have done to stay in the game longer that you could have done any better?
No shot.
I love that. That's my favorite one. I did it all, man. I was good to go.
He's right.
Yeah, he is.
Now, there's all this talk about the third time through the lineup, and that's what Kevin Cash says. And some people say he's just a puppet, mm-hmm, and this is an organizational philosophy, and he's basically falling on the sword, and this is what he has to do. Here's Blake Snell talking about all that third time through the lineup talk.
You know, it's going to be tough, man. Like, I get it's a third time through the lineup, but I think I'm going to make the adjustments I need to make as I see them, you know. I don't know, man. I just believe in me. I believe in my stuff. I believe in, you know, what I was doing. I didn't walk nobody. They had two, you know, hits up the middle. The slider to Barnes, you know, tip your cap. That was a bad pitch. And he got a hit off that. Good job. But for most of that game, man, I was dominating every outcome possible. So I'm proud in the way that, you know, I scouted them. I scouted myself. I'm just proud of everything I did to put the team in a situation to win. And I wanted to keep going, man. I felt so confident, you know, hopefully see him a third time through and a fourth time if needed. I mean, I wanted to go that whole game, burn the tank and see how far I could go.
Was there any conversation there between you and Kevin?
No, there was no convo. He just came out and, you know, that was it. I just felt with how I felt today, like, I just want to ride.
He basically was saying, look, I get it, but I was on top of my game and I had these fools. I had them.
I want to give this kid some credit, and I'm calling him a kid just because he's young, man. Like, he's in his mid-20s, and he's a very outspoken dude. Blake Snell could have gone up there and fired Kevin Cash up. He could have basically said, this is the dumbest thing ever, and 99.9% of baseball fans, sports fans would have had his back.
Totally with him.
But he went up there like a true professional, and what might end up, there's a very good chance that this is going to be the most heartbreaking day of his athletic career. No matter what he goes on to do, this could be the most heartbreaking day that's going to linger with him forever. You heard Zach Greinke talking about the A.J. Hinch decision about a year after it happened. That's going to happen to Blake Snell.
Yeah.
And Blake Snell was grooving more than Greinke. Listen to this final question of the press conference. And Blake Snell, during the question, I want you to listen close to the beginning. He looks over. I don't know if he's talking to a family member. I don't know if he's talking to a PR person.
Mm-hmm.
But someone who you can tell is a Kevin Cash guy,
yeah,
who's going to write a story defending Kevin Cash, asks a question, and while he's asking it, Blake Snell, who'd been up there for about 7 minutes, you can hear him kind of say, I got to stay consistent, I got to stay focused, mm-hmm, and he delivers an answer. So I want to tip my cap not only to Blake Snell for what he did on the field, but what he did off the podium. Listen to this.
Justin Granite.
Blake, part of the reason why you guys made it to the World Series was because of the unique decision-making of Cash and of the front office. And as a competitor, are you able to see and understand why he made that decision at the time he did? Can you not comprehend why that decision was made?
Cash is a hell of a manager. We can't take that away from him. I mean, if Nick gets out of the jam like he usually does and our bullpen holds it down like they usually do, no one's talking about it. So at the end of the day, I see both sides. Cash is usually right. So for you guys that are going to write bad stories on the decision, like, he's usually right. And, yeah, man, it sucks. I mean, I'm a competitor. I want to be the best in the world. So there's no, you know, pointing the fingers or anything like that. It's just, I'm a competitor. He's a competitor. Everyone on this team's a competitor. So he did what he thought was going to be the best move, and you know, they capitalized on it, and that's that.
And here's the other part of this for Astros fans, localizing it here. Get ready. I mean, James Click built that team and the entire philosophy and the culture. And James Click is here now. I would not expect Dusty Baker to be the manager next year. I really wouldn't. I think they're committed to what the Rays are doing. They developed it with the Rays, and that's going to happen here. It's going to happen all over baseball, but it's definitely going to happen here.
I honestly don't think James Click's feelings. Obviously, you want a payroll when you're a GM, but I don't think limiting the payroll is really going to hurt his feelings based on the way that he does things and the way he likes to do it. Because this is modern day Moneyball, that the Rays play. Although it was more of a cut and dry thing than analytics, I thought. 7070 on the text line says Click literally hired a manager the opposite of Cash. No, Click did not hire Dusty Baker.
Yeah.
And then he came back and said, well, he extended him. No, he did not extend him. That was Jim Crane.
So yeah. No, I would not. I'd hope he is, and he's got that extension, but I would not expect him to be the manager next year.
Coming up, the B.O.B. twigs. My goodness, these twigs are hilarious. You're going to laugh. You might also cry, but the spirit of B.O.B. is lingering at NRG, and we'll hear it next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Landry Locker.
John Lopez, SportsRadio610.com, is questioning the decision to fire Bill O'Brien. Can't believe.
I don't know if you're really going that far.
Are you now?
I'm saying. Well, you tell me if it's not. I'm saying that right now.
Piggy, is he questioning it?
I'm saying that right now.
It sounds like it.
Hold on. Hold on, cowboy. I'm saying that right now, the Bill O'Brien firing is mostly symbolic. And the reason I'm saying that is because what has changed? Both of y'all, tell me what's changed from having Bill O'Brien still and having fired him?
You are guaranteed that he will not be here in 2021, yeah, and there will be a new staff.
That's the symbol. You know, at least you know there will no longer be any Bill O'Brien. But you're not making any trades, although there's a little bit of promise percolating right now with Will Fuller and or Randall Cobb. But if you don't, and I'm basing it on what John McClain has adamantly said, flat out. I mean, I think he said, used the word absolutely, right, Figgy, that they will not trade J.J. Watt. Didn't know about other stuff. And then he doubled down and told Sean and Seth the exact same thing this morning. If that's the case, all it is symbolic. You're just saying, look, you wanted Bill O'Brien fired, we fired him. But in terms of, like, gathering more resources, accumulating more draft picks, you know, making the job more attractive for future coaches who are going to have choices, with the Jets and the Jaguars in a better position in terms of some of the things that they have available to them, that you haven't done anything. Haven't done anything yet.
I get what you're saying. I guess I can come around on that.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, outside of there's going to be a new coach, there's going to be a competent GM, hopefully.
Yeah.
After the season, the stench, my gosh.
The stench is gone.
The stench is there.
No, well, that stench, the Bill O'Brien stench.
It was on display yesterday.
Yeah.
Because the B.O.B. twigs, and most coaches have branches off of their coaching tree, like Bill Parcells has Bill Belichick, so on and so forth. The twigs, Bill O'Brien twigs.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who haven't done very well in the NFL and guys who wouldn't have NFL jobs had it not been for him were on display yesterday, and man, were they in rare form. And I'm not talking about the guys on the defensive side of the rock.
Yeah, that's
because I think the guys on the defensive side of the rock, if you hear them talk, they know what they're talking about. The Anthony Weavers, the Rumpfs, mm-hmm. Those guys, I think they know what they're doing. But offensively, King Bill didn't want guys who challenge him. That's why he brings in a guy like John Perry, who's never coached in the NFL, who's never coached D1, who was an assistant coach at Brown when Bill O'Brien was there, who was out of coaching before Bill O'Brien decided to bring him in and coach tight ends and now wide receivers. Mike Devlin, who was with the Jets before, but they weren't happy with his work with the Jets. Nobody's been happy with his work with the Texans. And Tim Kelly, who's calling the plays, who's never had a coaching job until now where he wasn't working for Bill O'Brien. Those are the twigs, the offensive guys. And when you hear him talk, man, it's funny, first of all, but it's also kind of clear as to why this offense hasn't been in the top half of DVOA with Bill O'Brien, why this offense can't run the ball, why they can't block, and really why they never really made progress with King Bill. Here's Mike Devlin talking about how the offense needs to improve. Take it away, Devy.
It's our job to try to get that 49 yards, and that's what we're going to be studying this week, how to get better in that area to improve in all facets of the run game. A great Texan once told me, Hayden Fry, God rest his soul, was able to go to his celebration of life in January. He said, sometimes you just got to scratch where it itches too. That's kind of the approach sometimes in some of these games and how they've been developing.
That's a question on how you improve.
Is he trying to cultivate like the sympathy vote? Great Texan, Hayden Fry.
Don't know.
Because that came out of nowhere.
Oh no.
Came out of nowhere. I don't know where it's relevant either.
No idea what he's talking about. Here's him where he really makes kind of he makes himself look incredibly silly. Talking about Max Sharping and why Max Sharping, who just got put on the COVID list, by the way.
Yeah.
Wasn't playing before, but why he hasn't been able to be effective.
We talked about the goals to get back, and he's steadily been working towards that and shows that improvement from last year. I think as we look at this crazy year, one of the things that occurred, I think, with a lot of second-year players and first-year players, that time missed in the spring.
Come on, man.
And training camp and everything else that we did. Okay, basically when he came back, I did not see the jump or the leap that you would expect.
Okay, so what are you really trying to tell us? You needed a full training camp and more time with these guys because otherwise you'd have just been dominant if you'd have had that. Here's the problem with that. 31 other teams had to deal with COVID as well and other restrictions, and 30 other teams started after you did. The Chiefs and the Texans started workouts and training camp before everybody else.
The Baltimore Ravens have a third-round rookie starting on their offensive line. They have five other rookies playing. The Steelers have a rookie in Chase Claypool, second-round pick, who has been their best receiver. The Chiefs have a running back in Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who has added a whole nother element to their offense. The Titans are starting a second-year guard and a second-year guy on the defensive line who batted down the pass against the Texans, which led to their win. The Colts have three second-year guys starting on one of the best defenses in the NFL and a rookie safety, as well as a rookie running back starting. The Browns are starting a rookie left tackle, two second-year guys on defense. The Bills are starting a second-year tackle, and they're also starting a first- and second-year guy on the top two spots on their running back depth chart. They also have second-year guys starting on their defense. The Raiders are starting two rookies and five second-year guys, and there's three teams in the AFC that have as good of a record, if not better record, than the Texans that are starting rookie quarterbacks. That's a you problem, buddy. That's either a you make things way too difficult, or you're trying to find excuses, or you don't know how to get the most out of guys' problem. If you, like King Bill used to say, are using the COVID as an excuse, because people have adjusted all over in every aspect of life.
Here,
if you can't do it, that's on you.
Listeners, everyone. I mean, we got it's just a cop-out. It's a cop-out. And part of me is like, well, who cares? These guys aren't going to be here next year. But I think the other part of me, the more important part for Texans fans, is this. You want to know how you got here so fast? It's because you had guys like this that were, I'm not going to say incompetent, because they're competent coaches. They're just not NFL-ready, NFL-level, NFL-winning-level coaches that were reflective of Bill O'Brien.
Yes, man. They're yes, man. Yeah. That's what they are. Here's Devy talking about the interior offensive line getting blown up. Go ahead, Devin.
Yeah, I think just overall, obviously, we just, you know, just the way the season goes, we all got to do better.
Okay,
interior wise, I think there, just to be honest with you, there were some mismatches that weren't really we could have done better against, that I thought we would have done better against. And that's what you're seeing. I think there were some mismatches in there from a skill set wise that I got to try to continue to put them in better spots to kind of get a better advantage there.
Why don't you back up the bus more on your own player?
But you realize
there
Green
were
Bay,
some mismatches,
you know,
from
what Green Bay's defense
skill
is? Defense, their defense is not great.
No, and they were very straightforward.
There
because
were mismatches?
You and I were at the game, and I think I turned to you a couple of times, certainly to our guy B. Scott, and I remember distinctly saying, they're getting pressure, they're stopping the run, and they're not doing anything fancy up front. They weren't doing any. They were just beating the Texans. You would have thought from what Devlin just said, that's because our guys aren't very good. I don't know, man. I mean, you're backing up the bus on your guys when you also said if I'd have just coached them longer, you know, they'd be better. I mean, he's just anybody but himself to blame.
There's more from him. I mean, he sounds a lot like someone I had to listen to for 6+ years, quite honestly. I can see why they got along so well. I also see why his offensive line might underachieve just like the offense has.
Yeah.
You know, we're not all stat guys.
That guy. Here is one of that guy's twigs talking about his job and what his job is.
You know, so my job is to come in and to do what the coordinator says to do, and we have the same issues every week, and that issue is there's going to be somebody 6 inches from your face trying to rip your face off. So whatever's going on, you better go out there, you better perform. So that's our job. My main focus now to the end of the season is to try to improve from week to week to week. To me, you're starting to see that. Last week, in my opinion, we should get that there were some mismatches that we should have done. I would hope we would have done better against, especially inside.
My problem is this: you're telling me how crappy it was against Green Bay, and then you're saying we're starting to see improvement. That's almost like I'm a good coach, so it's going to improve, and it is. But we basically got smacked around by a. Okay, Green Bay defense. What is he saying?
He's doing a really good job of blaming the players without flat out saying, hey, these guys are awful. It's not me. He just did it again right there. He did it in the entire availability. I would have thought we'd have had some mismatches in the middle, and especially in the interior where we didn't respond. Oh, really? So it's not your fault. It's the guys that just didn't perform.
But the problem with this guy blaming the players is that he was trusted in the evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, O'Brien was on the record multiple times talking about Mike Devlin. And you can just type in Mike Devlin, great offensive line, evaluation, Bill O'Brien. You'll see it on the internet. He would always be running the drills at the combine for the offensive linemen. And Bill O'Brien would talk about how whenever they drafted Titus Howard or anyone, he sat down with Mike Devlin. They figured out Max Sharping. Yeah, Devlin liked this guy. We trusted him, blah, blah, blah. He's the last guy that can blame players because there's on-record talk from Bill O'Brien talking about that he was part of the evaluation, and he's also part of the guy that's in charge of developing him. If Anthony Weaver or someone from the secondary or Rumpf want to come out and say something about players, which they didn't.
Yeah.
But if they wanted to, they could. Because they were basically just handed Vernon Hargraves and Philip Gaines
right. And
Eric Murray and all these guys. And they were just handed them and they were just told, all right, let's make it work. Let's guard Davante Adams.
He didn't make the actual call, but in essence, Devlin bought the groceries.
He was part of it.
Yeah.
The defensive guys were not. And that's just – I just hate hearing this type of stuff. Did you hear what Tim Kelly said about David Johnson?
This is awesome, but not in a good way. It is awesome that he actually, as you said, formed his mouth to say these words.
Here is Tim Kelly talking about one of the least productive, despite being one of the most used running backs in the NFL.
Yeah, he's done everything we've asked him to do. He's done a good job coming in and learning the scheme. You've seen him make big plays in the passing game. He had a big 16-yard reception, last week to put us, got us to the 2-yard line. He's been able to show his versatility. He's had some success running on the outside. And you look at the 13-yard run, I think it was, that was power that, was a designed inside run that he did a good job seeing it. And puncturing the defense and getting north and south. So, in every area, like we talked about.
He's just lying. I mean, because he knows better.
Does he?
He's not inept. He might not be the best coach in the world, but he's not inept.
I'm encouraged by you saying that. Because I was wondering.
I mean, he's just flat out not telling the truth. I'll put it that way. Okay.
You sure?
He said, yeah, he's been great. He had a 16-yard catch and a 13-yard run. He's got 392 total yards rushing right now.
I wonder how much he had to do with the David Johnson thing as a guy who's followed B.O.B. around for 10 years. Quite honestly, I wonder about that. But how can you
expect us to believe what you just said?
I don't know. What's he gaining from lying?
He's making himself look good. Again, these guys are working on their resumes as well, and he's defending Bill O'Brien's honor.
Okay.
I think both those things are at play here. And he doesn't want to say, boy, have I screwed this up?
Because no one is going to hire Tim Kelly to call an offense.
No, not in the NFL.
Unless
it's Bill O'Brien.
Unless it's O'Brien. And I don't even know about this Mike Devlin character.
Yeah.
Either. Here's the running back coach. My man Barrett. Talking about the difference between David Johnson and Duke Johnson and how they can improve the run game.
Trying to get Duke more opportunities, probably get them on the field a little bit more in first and second down situations. And I think that'll also, go back to your first question, help our run game as well, because he's a little different style of runner. When you talk about the different styles, I think, David's more of a power runner, more straight up and down the field type of deal. Got to really work on him sometime, getting his pass down more than anything else. And Duke, with just his style of running, he's not as fast as David, but I think with his feet and ability to make a guy miss in the hole, that's where you'll see the difference. He'll press and cut. That would be the biggest difference, I would say.
He basically said he's a better running back. That's the difference.
He's fucking for him to play more. He flat out said at the very beginning.
How troubling is
it? Trying to get him on the field more.
How troubling is it that a guy's been a running back in the NFL as long as number 31 has, and the guy who coaches him every day thinks that he's a power back? John McClain, who watches every game, originally he insisted, if we're being honest, he insisted that he was good between the tackles, but now he says he's better on the outside.
One of the many times that John McClain and I have gone back and forth on things, which we like to do, was that. I said, John, he can't run between the tackles. Oh, they expect him to be an every down back. Okay. I mean, that's what he's been, but he can't run between the tackles.
And he fits in this scheme. He doesn't fit in that scheme. Like, nobody can figure out.
Yeah.
Can we just all agree he's not a very good running back?
He's not
good.
Can
we just say that? And that's fine.
Okay. He's not good.
He's a nice guy.
Great guy.
There we go.
Not good at
football. Shout out to all the twigs at NRG. The facility is closed today. Maybe y'all are having a picnic at King Bill's house, and y'all are just reminiscing about the great
times. Somebody needs to tell Tim Kelly Bill O'Brien is no longer the head coach. He doesn't have to defend him.
Maybe a break is what these guys needed. For the OG John Lopez, for Figgy Fig being the best in the world at what he do, thanks to Stanford Route for joining us, and thank you to the Loopholes. If you listen, you are a loophole. For joining in, calling in, cussing me out on the text line, anything and everything. I love you very much. It's much appreciated. Will Randall Cobb or Will Fuller be traded by the time we're back on the air tomorrow at 10 a.m.? Who knows? But in the meantime, Clint Sterner and Ron Hughley are next.
Thank you, Figgy.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.